I got the news a little while ago that my first manager in computers, Chris March, had died. He was 59. And I thought I would just mention the effect he had on me, and also to talk about kind of the magic of scripting. Because besides all the other ways he inspired me, Chris March wrote an amazing, unique script. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been helping me get out of debt. I went to work for a company called Information Access Center, and my main manager was named Patrick O'Malley, but the direct manager I had, the one who would be the senior member of the team, was Christopher March. He had a lovely English accent, curly hair, really thick glasses, and he had a sense about him of just being, you know, happy, prosaic, just ready to take on whatever came in, think about it, and move on. I had been hired because the company had been primarily aimed towards VMS machines, and they were moving into Unix, and so they hired a greenhorn Unix administrator, himself running away desperately from the collapse of a video game startup he'd been part of, to bring them into this perceived new era in 1996. And forgive me if I've mentioned this somewhere else, but I was always impressed with my job interview. I was asked a very intense technical question about RAID systems and told to go home and optimize it. And I spent a week on it and came back and showed Pat O'Malley what I had done. And I had gotten it wrong. I'd gotten some of it right, but a lot of it wrong. And Pat said, well, you're hired. And the reason you're hired is not because you didn't come up with the right answer. You did it alone and you didn't know anything. It's because you, given an assignment in a job interview, took it seriously enough that you came back a week later with some sort of answer, and you didn't walk away or get angry or tell us that it wasn't worth it or anything else. You did the job and you came back, and that's who we need. And that's how I got into Unix administration. I was learning on the job. I was reading all sorts of books, trying to figure out how these new Sun machines that I was dealing with work, trying to take what I knew as a user of Unix systems and translate it into functional administrative skills. And all along the way, there was Chris. Chris was learning right along with me, and we would share ideas, and we would implement things in the new systems, and then compare our work. Now, Unix administration, and administration in general with computers, it's a whole other subject. I want to focus on one aspect of it, which is script writing. Either you're somebody who has written a lot of scripts, or you're probably somebody who's never had to write much in the way of them. These are things like batch files, or putting in some sort of configuration text file that another program uses. You write a bunch of commands in a file. Maybe they have some sort of logic. They say that if this is the case and that is the case, then do this action. Otherwise, do that action. And in general, you can get away with pretty simple scripts. And after a while, though, you'll want to do something more and more and more complicated, and to be frank, you probably have outgrown the capabilities of the scripting language, but a lot of people push it right to the edge rather than have to learn a whole new environment that does things another way. So, for example, at this place that Chris and I shared, a bunch of the systems would be backed up every night, and something might go wrong with the tapes. We had people who would go in and put tapes into tape machines, and then they would run, and then the next shift would pull all the tapes that had ejected out of the tape machines, or report that they hadn't gotten out, and then the cycle would continue. Well, there's all sorts of ways things can go wrong. Things can take too long, or the tape never gets pushed in. We would get calls, either late at night or during the day to tell us that something about a backup hadn't worked and the person couldn't fill out the form in their little notebook, and what could we do? I ended up writing a script called Dump Truck, and Dump Truck would do all the things that I would have done in that phone call. It would tell them to go over and put the tape back into the tape drive, or it would tell them that something was wrong and it needed them to eject the tape and reinsert it. It basically replaced me, and by my estimate, the number of late-night pages I got about our backup system reduced by about 95%. Instead of being called once or twice a day, I started to get called maybe once a month. Scripting, in other words, had shown its power and its magic to me. It also showed me you could have a lot of fun. When you write a script, you often have to put in variables. You can name those variables anything you want. Oh, sure, there's formal teaching to tell you to make it understandable, but do you have to? So I would do all sorts of weird names and have thematic strangeness in them, and since I was the only person who had to look at them, usually, I got away with it. Scripts, you see, are written to fill a gap where a professional application might not be able to intuitively do the job, but still enough of a problem that it warrants somebody working on it, usually somebody who has no access to the original source code of the program. You start with building blocks. Perhaps you know that there's going to be a program that needs to run, and then a second program to check the output of the first program. Well, a script will work great for you. You run one thing, run the other one, and then you look at the output and have a bunch of decisions based on what that output is. No human interaction. In fact, combining it with something like a cron daemon in Unix, which runs things at a regular schedule, you can have a machine that runs itself. At least, that's the dream. The reality is usually a lot worse. I remember when I saw Tom Jennings, the creator of FidoNet, give a kind of fun, rambly speech at the Computer History Museum in California, where he talked about a whole bunch of things he had learned in his decades of work in all the different things he had done. And he mentioned, you know, in programming, 99% of your work is error correction. You can write logic all day, but the fact is all the different ways it can go wrong. That's where I spend 99% of my time, and that's where the program spends 99% of its time. He's right. A script that scratches an itch is easy. A script that accounts for all the different ways that scratch can go wrong, that's hard. So the problem we had, which could have been fixed in a whole bunch of different ways, was that we needed some sort of monitoring solution on the machines. If you've ever worked with machines or a bank of machines, you know there's a whole bunch of things that can go wrong with them. Disks fill, memory gets corrupted, programs don't run when they're supposed to, you don't see a file when you need it, maybe a disk drive becomes detached and then reattached and everything has to account for that, telecommunications breaks down. There's all sorts of things that can go wrong, and in an ideal world, you have monitoring that tells operators or the owners things they have to do. And, if we're really shooting for the sky here, fix them itself. This is a business. This is an industry out there. But back in the 1990s, in this particular place, we didn't have a budget for the kind of monitoring we thought we might need. At least, I guess that's what happened. Because Chris started to work on one. He started to write a monitoring system from the ground up, every aspect of it. He wrote it in Z Shell, which was something that he could get to run on almost every machine. And it was a project that consumed Chris. He bought books about monitoring and Unix systems, about understanding how file handles worked and how disks interacted on Solaris and Linux and every other operating system that was Unix-based that was in our facility. He read up on how to move log files and provide network packets and monitor them. He looked up everything. He did the best he could to become as much of an expert on system internals, and then turned around and wrote Heimdall. Heimdall was to be the solution, the universal, all-in-one solution to all of the monitoring and reporting needs of the Information Access Center. It would be documented. It would be understandable. It would send information out to our operations team to enable them to both make decisions and to also, ideally, fix many of the problems itself and report to us with a kind of pleasant flourish that it had finished fixing the problem it was reporting on. How many projects start out with this kind of a dream? Heimdall was the sword by which Chris was going to cleave our monitoring environment in twain. I'm so impressed that he thought this was the way to go about it. I have a lot of memories at this time of Chris hunched over his machine, typing furiously into the night. We would have our day-to-day work, but then Chris would be in his cubicle, working away on Heimdall, documenting it, making sure that the comments in the scripts were as complete and full as possible, and then figuring out what made it run right, what didn't work, and keep refining, ever polishing. Obviously, we had a number of test systems he could put it on, and then over time, we expanded it out to a large amount of the environment, at least all the places where the customers were comfortable with having us put our own strange monitoring script on it. You see, there's this one little bit about monitoring scripts and scripts that are meant to help you. The irony is that a script that is meant to make your system run better could break and bring your system down to its knees. So some customers weren't having any of this. But Heimdall unquestionably became a thing. It became how we kept track of our customers' systems. Chris continued to work on it. He continued to document it. So I ultimately left the company a couple years later, and when Chris left, he took Heimdall with him. Heimdall worked. It would report what was going on. It would keep track of all sorts of system settings. We could have thresholds and messaging and the ability to turn things off for a while during maintenance. It did everything. A 100% homegrown, organic system of monitoring. But there was one other aspect to Heimdall that I wanted to mention because now that my friend Chris is gone, I want to talk about how he put himself into the script. At various points, I had to go look at the source code. I thought maybe I could help, maybe I could do some sort of changes or maintenance or make things better. But when I went in there, I realized there was no way I was going to set foot in it. Here's why. Heimdall is the name of the god that overlooks Asgard and who sounds the horn to protect it. And the Heimdall monitoring system was composed of a few dozen scripts, each of which had a function that interlocked, and Chris had named every script after a function of Norse mythology. Oh, I can't overstate this. All the names were in there. Thor, Loki, Yggdrasil, Bifrost, you name it, it was in there. The script that did communication would be called Bifrost, and each of those scripts, if you missed it, would have a capsule description of the original Norse reference that the script was named after. It would tell you about Bifrost and the Rainbow Bridge. It would tell you about Yggdrasil and Fenrir the Wolf, and it would tell you what they did. So he would be Fenrir the Wolf, and it would be this wolf that was owned by this god, but it would also be the script that would track the logs for truncation. And it was throughout the system. The variable names were in Norse. The names of the subroutines would be in Norse. There would be gods who were scripts and objects who were routines, and they would be called throughout the entire script system, such that, by the end, even if you had a glancing awareness of how the script worked, you knew everything you needed to know about Norse mythology. Heimdall was, in other words, a mythology-based monitoring system. And frankly, it changed how I looked at Chris. I couldn't believe the levels he had gone to in this coding and learning all of this, and along the way, teaching himself an entire range of Norse mythology, simply because, I guess, it made things easier to follow. If the wolf at the door was a subroutine, or this sword was a program to cut logs, maybe it all had some sort of intuitive sense. But what it meant was that sometimes when the system had issues or ran into errors, he had all sorts of error-catching routines, and they would respond that Loki had done something, or that Thor was needed, or that Fenrir was rearing his ugly head and not able to do what he was asked of, and this would fill the logs of the monitoring, and the operators would let us know. I was at Information Access Center for a few years. Chris himself had moved on to one of the companies that we hosted and was working there. We didn't see very much of each other after that, although we did interact online occasionally. The news that he was gone hit me hard, because when Pat had given me that big chance jumping into Unix administration, Chris had to sign on, and Chris had to live with me day in and day out as I learned, and he said it was okay, and he ended up working with me the most of anyone. And it was his belief in me and his support of me that helped me onto the road of success. I drove the hours up to Chris's memorial and saw his family and saw so many people arriving to pay their respects. It was really wonderful to see that, and among them was Pat O'Malley. And I guess I just needed to tell somebody who had affected my life how much they had done so. So I'm sure I totally bent Pat's ear talking about how appreciative I was of those early steps he gave me and his support through the years, and how a lot of what he approached in terms of public speaking and tackling problems had become part of my DNA, had become part of what I am now. And I guess it was partially because Chris wasn't there to hear it, but I did want somebody who had been such a part of my life to know all the great things they'd done for it. I only wish I could have told Chris himself, and to let him know that 20 years later, Heimdall still burned bright in my mind. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, James Bekoyanu, Adam Green, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been helping me get out of debt.